big disagreements and divisions are at the heart of some political developments here and abroad. We speak to columnist and commentator Jonathan Katzenelenburgen. Welcome, Jonathan.
Good morning. Good morning.
May we start with the row between former President Thabo Mbeki and President Cyril Ramaphosa over the process for the national dialogue?
Well, it's quite something. Here we thought it all was going to kick off on August the 15th with what they call a national convention. And it'll be without some of the most prominent NGOs, the foundations, the struggle foundations as they're known. So the Chalema Motlanthe Foundation, among others, the Thabo Mbeki Foundation, and so forth, and the F.W. de Klerk Foundation. So the F.W. de Klerk Foundation says it will be part of the national dialogue, but not be part of the national convention, the first of which will be held this Friday. But the Mbeki Foundation is pulling out so far, unless there are further talks. But Ramaphosa seems absolutely intent on going ahead with this. And after months of planning, one still doesn't know what this is really all about. And the public has very little idea. So from what I understand, the aim will be to come up with a social compact. And you might well ask, what is a social compact? Well, South Africa, the government at least, prides itself on dialogue and social compacts. Although what they really are, if you really consider it, are deals between elites. So we had, they call the CODESA agreement a social compact. Well, yes, there were a large number of parties involved. But ultimately, what it was the deal between the Nationalist Party and the ANC. And there have been compacts on a whole lot of other things. Whether they're much good is I don't really know. But, you know, what they do is essentially they're deals between elites, but they exclude others. So NEDLAC, which is the great instrument of, it's an official government body, for compacting, as it's called, between government and labor and big business, that big labor, big business. No unemployed are represented in the social compacts that they draw up. So goodness knows what's going to come out of the national dialogue. And one of the points on which the foundations disagree is they say that with Ramaphosa, they are criticizing the process for not including the citizens of the country. But how do you really include all the citizens of the country in such a process? It's virtually impossible. You know, we do have elections. So, you know, the question continually arises, what is this really about? But Ramaphosa has grand aims for this. One is to reset democracy, and it's feeding into this view that the country is in crisis, enormously high unemployment, government that is not working, and other problems. So, but how it'll address all this, and it could go terribly wrong for the government. There could be at these citizen meetings, what could happen is that there's a populist outcry, and person after person gets up and screams at the government, which would be quite embarrassing, particularly if it's on television. But organizing these things is very difficult. But I think what, you know, the government's aim, I think I would suggest, is to get views that support what it's doing. Oh, ANC, you're doing very well. But only if we had perhaps EWC, and they get the EWC and more BEE and doubling down on what they're actually doing. But oh, we want a bit more delivery, you know, and these are suggestions for more delivery. So it could all feed into the government's narrative. So my view is that I don't think much of the process. I think it's unwieldy. I don't know what will come out of it. But it's best to participate. This is a fora. Get in and participate and play the game and perhaps form coalitions with other parties that like-minded parties to ensure that the outcome in the social compact that it's drawn out is not totally biased.
Hmm. On to another row, that between the Reserve Bank and the Finance Minister over prospects for a tighter inflation target.
Well, the last week, a senior banker, the boss of Nedbank, said that he was perturbed by the row between Lesetse Kanyako, governor of the Reserve Bank, and Enoch Godongwana, who is the finance minister, over the new target that the Reserve Bank wants. The Reserve Bank now wants a target between 1% and 3%, but it seems that Godongwana is not at all keen on this. And the suggestion might be he wants more growth than inflation. The higher interest rates are, the less chance there is for growth. So he's desperate for growth. The Reserve Bank wants to control inflation, and it wants tighter controls because they would be more in line with our trading partners and help defend against rand weakness, which is an inflationary pressure. So inflation now is pretty low. They normally go for a target of 4.5%, which lies in right slap middle between the inflation target band of 3% to 6%. But now the governor wants it lowered to 1% to 3%, and it's 3% at the moment. So now what he says is that they're going to aim for the bottom of the existing range, which means 3%. So whether the governor adjusts that, whether the finance minister, whose authority it is to adjust that target, agrees to that or not, they'll be going for a lower target, which will give them more policy room. But it might curb growth, and we've got no growth at the moment. But at the same time, the governor's completely right. As an emerging market, subject to political volatility and concerns about financial stability, although we're very well managed, but you know, we just fall into that emerging market category. So there are those concerns, although our bank regulation is really top rate compared to most other countries. It's going to be interesting to see what the outcome here is. They'll have to reach some sort of accommodation on this sooner rather than later.
While we are on finances, onto Trump's ongoing tariff war and the African National Congress's defiance over possible sanctions against its leaders.
The Secretary General of the ANC last week say that bring on personal targeted sanctions. I wonder once they happen, and perhaps U.S. allies fall into line behind that, whether they'll be saying the same thing. It might make life very difficult for them and their families. And I think that it could just happen that the U.S. finds, if U.S. finds international support, but they might have support from Democrats as well, who are also pretty sick and tired of the ANC. And if you recall, there was a act passed last year with a bipartisan, that's Democratic and Republican support, to monitor relations with South Africa. So these could be coming on sooner rather than later. And I don't know what sort of movement the ANC expects on the 30% tariffs that were imposed on South Africa last week, because the U.S. issued those four demands to the our three Afrikaner leaders who visited in June, and it seems that the ANC hasn't taken those on board at all in its replies to the U.S. And it's and what it is tantamount to is that they are prepared to sacrifice what is estimated to be 100,000 jobs, at least 35% of which are in the agricultural sector, and therefore are pretty unskilled types of jobs, to retain BEE. And the US has stipulated that these four conditions are a prerequisite for any normalization. So just to remind you what those four conditions are, there are the last one was the scrapping BEE for all U.S. companies, U.S. investors in this country. Then there was a call for the government to criticize, condemn all kill the Boer chants. Then there was the prerequisite to not go for any EWC, and finally make farm attacks priority crimes. And I think there's a way for the government to do this without seeming to back down. But the ANC is making a big thing of this, and more than it perhaps should. But I think it could engineer language, come up with appropriate language to meet these three U.S. demands, and change the BEE requirements. But it said it would look into the DA Minister of Telecommunications said he would look into changing the BEE requirements to make them an equity equivalent requirement. But we've heard nothing about this. And I think speed is of the essence now. And I just don't expect any movement on this.
While we are on Trump, he is set to meet Russian President Vladimir Putin on Friday, but the Europeans and Zelensky are not happy at being excluded.
Not happy at all. So Trump, likes this whole idea of doing a deal with those he thinks have the power. But I think that at a later stage, the Europeans and Zelensky might be included. One doesn't know where this will go. And there are probably quite a few other issues apart from the Ukraine ceasefire negotiations to talk about. But, what's the deal for Putin? Trump has suggested that it's giving up the Donbas area and beyond, all the area that Russia controls along the sea of the sea that joins the Black Sea, is just to the north of Black Sea, the Sea of Azov. And I think that Zelensky is totally against giving up any Ukrainian territory, including Crimea, to the Russians. So, and he's prepared to fight on and has European backing. But I wonder what the Europeans are saying to him about suing for peace, and not continuing the war, because, they're taking a great strain. But what seems to happen in this war is that one moment Ukraine has the drone advantage, and the other Russia has the drone advantage. So it's effectively a arms war between technologies between this what has come to be this key drone technology. It's been absolutely key, and at the moment the Russians are able to go undetected and seem to have the advantage. Plus, they're firing ballistic missiles at Kiev. So I think I don't know how much longer Ukraine can keep going, but everyone's been surprised. Many commentators were saying this is going to be over within weeks when the Russians invaded. But yet here we are now, And there's the Ukrainians are still there. And it seems that even with the limitations on U.S. support, they're still, call it, hanging in there. So, and where, you know, the other issue, of course, is whether Putin can be trusted. But also, does he really want an end to this war is another question. The Russian economy is taking strain. But, you know, as while they have elections in Russia, he is a strongman ruler and does not have to listen to the electorate and the populace's about economic hardship issues as other leaders do. So he has a lot of leeway in that, and he has to exit Ukraine with his pride intact.
Lastly, may we talk about the apparent divisions that have emerged between Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Israeli Defense Force chiefs and allies over Gaza?
Well, it seems that I might add to that, that there's also a growing popular opposition to the war from the hostage families. The hostage families have called for a nationwide strike on Sunday, the first day of the Israeli work week, and an increasing number of reservists who have served in Gaza no longer are reporting for duty. I think the Israeli population is tiring of the war. And I think one reason for this is that, as Clausewitz famously said, war is a continuation of politics by other means. So it's, and the political element is that one can understand that this is a war of vengeance against Hamas, hence, you know, the calls for its elimination and much of the destruction in Gaza. You know, what comes the day after? Hamas must have been weakened now. And, you know, what is Netanyahu's vision? And I think that's one of the reasons for, apart from the sheer duration of the war, is that you don't have this vision for the day after, for a peace. What does Netanyahu want? So he says with the occupation of Gaza City, they will be going for the final Hamas stronghold. And it's clearly a negotiating posture as well to possibly get a ceasefire and to get the hostages released. There's no doubt about the public pressures to get the hostages released, because it's been absolutely terrible and what Hamas has done and in keeping those hostages in terrible conditions. And evidently, there's been starvation and extreme abuse. So, you know, it would make things a lot easier in all of this if Hamas just unconditionally released the hostages, and because Israel would have no causes belli then. You know, the hostages are released. Hamas is very weak. Its Iranian backers are weakened and cannot get inflows of arms to Hamas. So. You have a terrific, for Israel, it's a very difficult negotiating partner. And there are international pressures increasing. One just wonders how these final steps will be taken to this seeming war without end, and how the domestic political pressures on Netanyahu will emerge. But the criticism from the disagreements with the Israeli chief of staff are very significant. The IDF has the is a very trusted institution in Israel, and if they're saying that from a purely sort of technical military standpoint, that there's little point in pursuing this occupation or Gaza City, and that there should be peace. Well, that's quite some pressure on Netanyahu. But yet, he relies on, and this is the fundamental problem in Israeli politics, is that governments have to rely on these religious parties. And one of the ministers from the religious parties now says he doesn't think that Netanyahu will go ahead with this occupation, and which he wants to see. So I think it depends on the outcomes of negotiations that the Trump envoy Steve Bitkoff is trying to push forward with the Qataris and the Egyptians to reach some sort of settlement with Hamas and with Israel. But I think it's extremely difficult. I think that Netanyahu certainly is in a predicament. Plus, there's also pressure on Netanyahu from a number of diaspora Jews who've signed a petition calling for, and they're not by no means extreme, but they're calling for, by no means Palestinian supporters or doubting the legitimacy of Israel, but they're called for the end to the war and working towards a hostage release, telling Netanyahu that the calls for a permanent occupation and settlement in Gaza and the West Bank are completely out of order, and also calling for the Netanyahu government to uphold the rule of law in the West Bank and not allow settlers to seize land owned by West Bank Palestinians. So, but will it be solved? I somehow doubt it, but there might be at least end to these hostilities.
Thank you. That was commentator and columnist Jonathan Katzenelnbogen speaking to BizNews about major political developments here and abroad. Thank you, Jonathan, and I am Chris Stein.
Pleasure. Thank you.